content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Annika Gall from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from, wow, what a variety of things. I shall be reading to you from the UCLA Health Newsletter, from AARP, and from Kiplinger's, and I might just throw in a couple of other sources. Well, welcome back, everyone. I know last week I kept referring to everyone, you know, let's dance, and I am the dancing DJ, and I hope you're still dancing. I'm not going to back away from that. It's so much fun. Well, my first article here today is about chronological age doesn't always match biological age. And this is from the UCLA Health newsletter. Researchers at University of California San Diego School of Medicine report that elderly women who sit for more than 10 hours a day and are otherwise not very active have cells that are biologically older by 8 years compared to women who are less sedentary. Researchers analyzed data from nearly 1,500 women ages 64 to 95. The study, published online in the American Journal of Epidemiology, found that elderly women with less than 40 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity per day and who remain sedentary for more than 10 hours per day have shorter telomeres, or tiny caps found on the ends of DNA strands. Like the plastic tips of shoelaces, telomeres protect chromosomes from deterioration and progressively shorten with age. As a cell ages, its telomeres naturally shorten and fray. But unhealthy lifestyle factors such as obesity and smoking may accelerate that process. Shortened telomeres are associated with cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and major cancers. Our study found cells age faster with a sedentary lifestyle, says Aladdin Shadaya, Ph.D., leading author of the study with the Department of Family Medicine and Public Health at UC San Diego School of Medicine. Discussions about the benefits of exercise should start when we are young, and physical activity should continue to be part of our daily lives as we get older, even at 80 years old. This research was funded in part by the National Institute on Aging. All right, and here's another article from the same source, UCLA Health. Feeling stressed out? Relief is just a breath away. How conscious, deep breathing can improve your well-being. Okay, here's my deep breath. Relax and take a deep breath. It's a common recommendation from physicians and friends who seek to help you reach a state of calm when you're feeling frazzled. Breathing is an essential and automatic function, but with a deliberate focus on breathing, it's a proven tool for healing and well-being. Mere minutes of conscious breathing can help you feel better and think more clearly. Conscious breathing can change your physiological state, explains certified meditation teacher Natalie Bell with the UCLA Mindful Awareness Research Center. When we feel stress, our heart rate may increase, our breathing may get shallow, blood pressure can rise, and we might go into fight, flight, or freeze mode. We can actively shift that response by using slow, deep breaths. And activating the parasympathetic nervous system, sometimes referred to as the rest and digest system. The parasympathetic nervous system slows heart rate, is active during digestion, and helps bring equilibrium to the body. Deep breathing helps you calm down. That's why it's an integral part of many yoga, tai chi, and meditation classes. To gain the benefits of focused breathing, however, you don't need a formal or lengthy practice. Bell offers the following simple strategies as ways to incorporate the calm of deep breathing into daily life. Okay, coherent breathing. When you inhale, heart rate increases slightly. When you exhale, it decreases. The difference in heart rhythm is called heart rate variability, and it is beneficial to the heart and body. Coherent breathing creates a relaxed yet alert state by focusing on in and out breaths. How it's done. Sit comfortably upright, supporting your back if desired. Take a few deep breaths, allowing the belly to balloon outwards. Relax the mind as much as possible. Once you feel a bit more relaxed, begin the practice as follows. Exhale to a count of six. One, two, three, four, five, six. Allow several normal breath cycles to complete, and then again focus on exhaling to a count of six. Let the breaths be smooth and feel the body relaxing. Switch your focus by inhaling to a six count. Again, allow your body to breathe in and out naturally several times. Focus on the six count inhalation every few breaths. Combine these by inhaling for six and exhaling for six. There's no need for every breath in and out to be a six count, but eventually the idea is to piece together this rhythm without force. Allow your body to ease into it. The stop practice. This technique is an efficient and effective mindfulness method to create a pause or shift in the middle of the day. Do the stop practice for about 1 minute, advises Bell. After a stressful phone call or before talking with a loved one who is under pressure. The acronym guides the practice. S for stop, or the stop, yeah, or excuse me, S stop, or slow what you are doing. T, take a few deep, slow breaths. O, observe how you are feeling in your body as you are taking slower breaths. Notice the thoughts and emotions. Invite calm. P, proceed with what you are doing. According to Bell, visualizing the breath as nourishing can help create a more peaceful physical and mental state. As you inhale, imagine giving yourself something positive. Think of calm and ease, she recommends. When you exhale, think of releasing or letting go of stress. Practice, not perfection. Perfection is not the goal of any of these practices. People who have anxiety may try too hard to do it right. It's not about doing it right or trying to overly control it. The practices are meant to be gentle and unforced. Through time, this kind of attention can help decrease blood pressure as well as reduce other ill effects of stress, including headaches, digestive issues, and depression. The vagus nerve. Deep breathing stimulates the vagus nerve, the longest cranial nerve. This nerve extends from the brain and branches into and influences numerous vital organs. When stimulated through techniques like deep breathing, the vagus nerve triggers the release of various chemicals that can induce calm throughout the body. Researchers have been studying how electronically stimulating this nerve might treat a variety of conditions, including epilepsy, depression, asthma, stroke, migraines, and inflammatory diseases. And what you should know, deep breathing can quickly help you feel calmer. Techniques vary, but some can be done anywhere, anytime. Don't force it. Alternate regular breaths with suggested techniques. And finally, connecting body and mind through the breath benefits health. Okay, well, our next article is from the AARP magazine. No, that's not true. It is from Kiplinger's. That's what it's from. And it's entitled Living in Retirement by Janet Bodnar, Retired and Single. Readers weigh in. There's nothing better than having a dog to get you out for a walk to meet other dogs and people in the neighborhood, is what the blurb says from a lady standing here smiling at us in the picture. Okay, when I asked readers to share their experiences with being single in retirement, you didn't let me down. Not only did you offer useful advice, but you also came up with out-of-the-box ideas. And all of your stories are just as valuable for retirees who have a spouse or partner. Not surprisingly, a number of you recommended volunteering as a way to socialize, and the suggestions were all over the map. For example, Ed Chittister volunteers as an English tutor for international students at a community college, as a travel guide for field trips sponsored by the local senior center, he gets to travel free, and as a member of the investment advisory board for his town. In the past, he's also been a middle school math tutor and a dog walker at a humane society, and he may give those another try. I've changed my volunteer activities because sometimes I need to try something different, he writes. Volunteering isn't a panacea, and it's critical to find the right one. All my volunteer positions have ties to my interests, and I have actively sought them rather than passively searching the internet, writes Chittister. Reader Nyla Whitfield always wanted to work with children, so she began volunteering as a reading buddy at an inner-city school 3 years before she retired. And Doris Gunther recommends using your church as a resource. Deep and lasting relationships can be formed, writes Gunther. Good works can take place, and there are many opportunities to volunteer. Try a small church in your neighborhood. It's good for the soul. Making connections. Socializing can sometimes begin at home, even if you live alone. 4 years ago, I sold my house and moved to a condo building, writes Whitfield, so it's a built-in community of 54 friends. Note, don't be afraid to speak to people in the elevator. John Taxis joined the board of the Homeowners Association at his condo, which keeps me very busy and gives me a sense of purpose. Plus, living in a condo complex brings me in close contact socially, and being on the board makes me sought after, although that can be a double-edged sword. Socializing doesn't necessarily have to involve people. My number one suggestion for your readers who are alone is to adopt an older cat or dog, writes Lynn Derry. They make wonderful companions. Volunteer at a shelter, and before you know it, you will find the perfect companion. Plus, she says, there's nothing better than having a dog to get you out for a walk, to meet other dogs and people in the neighborhood. Reader Dorothy Few Wong who is 80 years old and has been retired for 25 years, recommends focusing on your physical as well as your mental well-being with regular exercise as part of a class or at the gym. That should be your first priority, writes Wong. The major objective for a single retiree is to live independently as long as possible. And remember, gyms are classic meeting places. That's where my recently married son met his future wife. Finally, a couple of you emphasized how important it is to be comfortable in your own skin. I don't need to cope with being alone in retirement because I actually prefer being alone most of the time, writes one reader. I have spent my life out in nature, working in the woods, and I love silence, absent from human chattering. Reader Rod Apple seconds that thought. I've found it more rewarding to seek fun and excitement rather than social connections, even if that means doing things solo, writes Apple, 63, who runs 5K races, paddle boards, and skis, among other activities. Sometimes I meet interesting people at the races or on the ski hill. But even if I don't find anyone to talk with, I've still had a great time. Retirement is what you make it. So why not live out your dreams? Well, our next article is also from Kiplinger's Personal Finance. How to get more from a smaller pie. The Society of Actuaries and the Stanford Center on Longevity have developed a withdrawal strategy geared for middle-income workers with less than $1 million in savings, people who often don't work with financial advisors. This Spend Safely in Retirement strategy relies on optimizing Social Security benefits, which ideally you would delay until age 70. That's the cornerstone of the strategy, says Steve Vernon, research scholar at the Stanford Center on Longevity and author of Retirement Game Changers. Social Security retirement benefits can start as early as 62. But taking them that early will reduce your monthly check by up to 30% compared with waiting until your full retirement age, 66 and a half for those turning 62 this year. And for every year you delay benefits past your full retirement age, your benefit grows by 8%. Few retirees, only 4%, delay Social Security until age 70. According to a new study that calculated that today's retirees are losing out on an average of $111,000 per household during retirement by claiming benefits early. Vernon acknowledges that it's a challenge to get people to delay claiming, but Spend Safely aims to get over this hurdle with a strategy to generate income in your 60s without Social Security. Pull the amount from your portfolio each year that you would have received from Social Security had you claimed benefits. If you're earning money from a part-time job, that will reduce the amount you will need to pull out. On top of that, withdraw an amount at a rate modeled after the required minimum distributions that older savers must take from tax-deferred accounts after age 70 and a half. This Spend Safely rate starts at 2.7% of the year-end portfolio balance at age 60 and gradually raises that to 3.6% at 70. Therefore, you would use the RMD withdrawal rates published by the IRS. Vernon says retirees can tweak this method, say, to boost their travel budget in the early years, although that would mean reducing withdrawals later. One drawback, annual withdrawals will go up and down with the investment portfolio's performance each year. Okay, well, we're going to switch gears here a bit, and this article is from the AARP magazine. Martin Short says he's wiser with age. The 2019 Movies for Grown-Ups Awards show host talks about comedy and the pursuit of happiness. What does the term Movies for Grown-Ups mean to you? Which films grabbed your attention recently? I thought A Star is Born was fabulous. I loved Beautiful Boy. Your stage show with Steve Martin has a kind of magic to it. Steve and I are very loose with each other. If I were doing my own show, it would be more structured. You can't be as playful by yourself. That's why I was never drawn to stand up at all. This is way more playful than a one-man show. Mainly, it's because we're very close friends. That's how this all started. I mean, we'll go on a vacation together, take our families to Jamaica on our time off from doing the show. How is comedy different now from when you got started? I don't know that it is. Comedy is so subjective. I love the Three Stooges. You might hate them. It doesn't make either one of us a moron. I don't know if you've ever heard the Mike Nichols and Elaine May album from their Broadway show. When you listen to it, it's 1960, and I think it's as relevant today as it was then. The characters work, and the choices are as funny as if you were seeing Second City in Chicago this evening. It's crazy just how hip and current they were. How do you keep your comedy current or timeless? Once in the 1990s, Christopher Guest asked me, "Do you ever think in terms of no longer being current? Do you worry that another kind of comedy that you don't find funny will take over?" And it had never even entered my mind. I think that was the last time I gave it thought, because it doesn't really matter to me. At the age of 68, I continue to go with my instinct of what I think is funny, and I continue to make a living. That's all that really matters. I'm not a big believer in shelf life. All right, so, do you have a bucket list of things you'd like to do? No. I had wanted to go to India. If I had wanted to go to India, I would have done it. If I'd wanted to direct a film or a play or a TV show, I would have. My life lists are more pragmatic. For decades, I've maintained a list according to several categories of well-being: health, family, friends, money, career, creativity, self-discipline, and lifestyle. Periodically, I give myself a report card. It shows what needs to be shored up. Health: have I had my annual physical? Friends: do I need to phone so-and-so? To me, life is a practical experience each day with a coating of, quote, "be as happy as you can be," end quote, on top. Be as happy as you can be. When I was a little boy in grade 2, as we Canadians like to say, the question was posed, "What is the most important thing in life?" And my response was, "To be happy." If you're lucky enough, part of that is being a helpful spirit to the people you love. That's what takes you from day to day. Being a helpful spirit to the people you love. How did you come to that philosophy, a sort of pragmatic pursuit of happiness? Not long after I finished university, I realized that success isn't just about your career. It's similar to a GPA, determined by the whole picture, not one course. So even if you're failing in one category, you can create a good, happy life if you shore up the other categories. And that's what I've tried to do. What's your favorite thing about getting older? Well, I definitely think I'm wiser now. You would like to think that you'll have the wisest version of yourself on the last day you live. Also, there was a time in my life when I'd face an audience and I'd have to start by winning them over. Now, when they see Steve and me come out, they go, "There they are!" We've already won them over with our careers up to that point. So that's nice. You lost your wife, Nancy, to cancer after almost 30 years of marriage. How has that affected you? Our marriage was a triumph, so it's tough. She died in 2010, but I still communicate with her all the time. It's, "Hey, Nan, you know?" How would she react to this decision or that, especially regarding our three kids? I believe that when people die, they zoom into the people that love them. This idea that it just ends and don't speak of them, that's wrong. That's based on denial that we're all going to die. So to me, she's still here. At the same time, her death emboldened me to take risks. With real tragedy, you become a little more daring. It's the yin to the yang, the positive part of life's dark side. A quick look at Martin Short, A Look Back. First role after college was in Godspell in 1972. He joined comedy show SCTV in 1982, later spent one season from 84 to 85 on Saturday Night Live. Starred with Chevy Chase and Steve Martin in Three Amigos in 1986. Won a Best Actor Tony Award in 1999 for his role in the revival of Neil Simon's Little Me, and published his memoir, I Must Say, My Life as a Humble Comedy Legend, in 2014. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Kogal, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Make it a great week, and please keep dancing.